Horn Church on the east side of town. Michael, come on up.
If you have a smartphone or a tablet, you can go to, you may have received a link. I asked some people to send some out, but you can go to presenting.com/freeborn. And you can follow along on the sermon notes if you're interested in doing so. That's presenting, like present, AIN.com/freeborn if you want to see that. All right. Am I good back there? All right. All right. So, a little bit about what's transpired since the last year. We've had a lot of changes in our area of the world. And, right, in our life. So, a little less than a year ago, we entered into discussions, Brother Pemberton and Linda and myself and Trini and Terry and Lupe. We all sat down a number of times, actually over quite a period of time, and talked about the possibility of joining up. And you know we've done that, but we talked about that quite a long time and discussed what that would look like and how that could work out. And basically our idea was, it seemed a little silly to me and I think to him for us to struggle separately when we could struggle together. Yeah. Amen. Amen. So yeah, we joined up the churches, and we closed down the two we had. So the Southside Church, we closed that legal entity down. He closed down the Gathering Post, and we rented a building over on Walsham Road and started holding meetings all together. And not only did we join up, but we decided we wanted to try to do something different. And this is just one time I'll say this to try to make this very clear. This is in no way a reflection on what anyone else wants to do. We just thought, you know what? We've done this a long time, and it's not working for either one of us. So let's just try to do something else. Who knows? You know, I think if we keep the message what it should be, and we keep our focus where we think it should be, well, then maybe different methods, right? We might find some success there. And what we're deeming as success is we want to win some souls, right? And we want to build a church that would then be able to teach and pastor and help those souls live a Christian life here on earth, right? And then we would like to be a part of sending the gospel to other places. Right? Other places in the world, other places in the city, in the country, whatever it is, we would like to extend our vision beyond ourselves. So that's kind of like our objective of what we're trying to accomplish, right? And that's what you're trying to accomplish. And so, we saw that our methods to that point just weren't being successful at all in any one of those areas really for us. There's only so much money that one person could give to missions, for instance. And so if you want to raise more money for missionaries, you really need to get more people together. I mean, there comes a point, or, you know, richer people maybe, I don't know, but you gotta do more of something, right, if you want it to happen. And we do. So, that's kind of our thing. So, we did a few things, and I think I owe you a bit of an explanation short on what we're doing different, so you have, you know, what it is exactly we're talking about, some of the things we changed. So one thing we did, and many of you know, is we've gone to one meeting. The reason we've gone to one meeting is because we basically decided we're going to try something, and we kind of encapsulated that into one phrase, and that phrase is, we want to have meetings that people want to go to. That's what we're trying to do. Now, there's several ways you accomplish that, and it's really about a mixture of using all of them, I think. One of them is, you know, we could say, well, we should just have meetings and people should be spiritual. But then I would answer and say, well, then let's meet Sunday mornings at 4 a.m. and let's meet Friday afternoons at 5 p.m. and whenever it's least convenient for everybody so we know we're all in the spirit. Well, obviously we're not doing that. We're very much taking advantage of labor laws in the U.S. and meeting on Sundays because it's convenient, right? It's the time. And what we found is it's not just convenient to meet on Sundays. Through my own informal investigations throughout the time at the Southside, I discovered something interesting about America that isn't true in Mexico. And that is that people in America want to go to church on Sunday. It's a really interesting phenomenon. And I'm not talking about Christians. We had a lot of people in our time at the Southside, and I would say maybe 10 to 15 visitors that fit this specific criteria, who were not saved, They were not Christians. They didn't think themselves as Christians in that way. But they wanted to go to a church. They just had a baby or whatever it is. But they had that desire to go to church, and they wanted to go to church on Sunday. And people drive around, and they all told us the same. They drive around looking for a church to go to on Sunday. Now, that doesn't happen in Mexico. Not a Christian church, right? But they're looking for a church, and they want to go to church on Sunday. So we think, okay, let's have meetings on Sundays then. People want to go to church on Sundays. So that's one way you accomplish it, is by looking and seeing what they want to do. But that's really just a very small part of what we're talking about, right? Because then you become a church that meets like once a year. Because, you know, you get backslidden and you never want to go. So that's not, we're not talking about just capitulating or just trying to accommodate the work schedule, which I think is valuable, or the spiritual status of any person. That's just a small part. The real issue about this is we want to hold meetings that people want to go to, however many that is. So we want to make the meeting something people want to attend. Now that's very hard. And we are certainly far from being at that level. We're not there. We're working. We're trying things. We're seeing what could work on that. For instance, we have a fellowship time. And for those of you here at Oak Knoll don't understand what that means, in general parlance, we serve donuts and coffee. Now, that's not my choice. I don't like either one. Right? But yes, we have a fellowship time, and we break the meeting up. So we have a 3-hour meeting, and we meet at 9, and we have an open meeting and / Lord's Supper. We alternate back and forth on that different days, but we have open meeting, Lord's Supper, and then we have our fellowship time, and that's about 20 minutes, and we try to, I'm not interested in what they're serving, but I try to go around and talk to people, gives me a time to fellowship with people, and then we have a teaching hour. And then we have the final service, a preaching hour. And so that's kind of how we have that organized. And we're trying to make the meeting every day, every Sunday, we're trying to make that something people will plan on wanting to go to. Not just Christians, anyone who goes, say, that was interesting, that was compelling, and we want to go to that. Now, one objection I kind of get sometimes from that is they say, well, then you're just going to lower to lowest common denominator and just keep people anything they want, right? And you're just going to, like, be this church where it's just all about fun and games and none of that. And that is one way to get some people. But you are seriously underestimating the way the world is right now, especially. Let me give it to you in a metaphor. If you were a new doctor and you wanted to get, you start your practice and you want patients, there's a couple ways you could go about that. You could decide that you're going to tell every person that comes in that they are 100% healthy and not to worry about anything. And that way everybody would want you to be their doctor. Or you could say, you know what? I'm just going to give them the truth. Now, you decide for yourself, but I suspect that the second doctor is going to do better than the first doctor. You may think people are looking for churches to tell them what they want to hear. I don't think so. I know some people are. And that's generally Christians who I think are generally have a problem with being backslidden. I don't think that's why anybody steps into a church, especially one that looks like ours. They have problems. They have difficulties. They have challenges. They have questions. They have curiosity. And they want to know something. And we think if we could develop a meeting that answered those questions, that addressed those problems, that helped them through those troubles, that presented the gospel the way it really is, as a measure of responsibility, your responsibility towards God, people respond to that. That's our assumption. That's our hypothesis. So, we are trying to lighten up a few things, but we do believe that would be absolutely the wrong direction to lower down to where we just sacrifice the message and do anything to get people in the chairs. I think that's a mistake. What kind of church would that be? That's not worth working for. That's certainly not what we're spending all this money for. We want to see people really saved and really changed and really moved into the ministry, whatever that might be for them. And I think people are looking for that. I'm not saying everybody's looking for that, but I think there are people who are really looking for that. So we want to try to have a meeting a church meeting that people like that want to go to. And that takes a lot of work. One of the things that we have done to try to accomplish that is that we have implemented a system of accountability and collaboration, specifically between the elders. So if whenever somebody preaches, we later go on and we give an assessment of what we thought the other elders do. In fact, anyone in the church can on our, we have like a little Facebook type app. It's not Facebook, but it's similar, but it's private to our church. And anyone can go on and say, this is what I thought about the message. And we encourage them to do so. I think that we cannot waste the 1 or 2 hours we have with bad preaching and not be addressed. We need to get better sermons, we thought, than what we were presenting on a regular basis. So we're working hard. Not just the accountability or the criticism of it, but also the collaboration. So generally, we'll post our idea before we preach it. We don't have a set schedule. We just, whoever wants to have something they want to preach, they can go onto the app, put on there, I want to preach this Sunday, this is my topic, this is what I think I'm going to say about it. Anybody that wants to give any ideas, this is what I think, or this is what you might want to add, they're welcome to do so. And anyone who's preaching is welcome to take any of those things and make it their own and preach it themselves. And so that's kind of what we're doing. So we're working with that. I'll let you know in a couple years how that works out. But that's kind of our idea as far as the churches. We've invested more money than I was ever comfortable of doing in different ideas. For instance, we've invested quite heavily in the music ministry. And we have, you know, microphones and mixers and stuff I don't understand. Josh takes care of all that. But whatever it is. So that leads us to another place. And that is that we're trying to be a church where there's a place for every ministry. So this is something that I had to deal with in myself. We talked about it earlier today. And that I'm good at certain things. And I have a tendency to squash or flatten everything that's not what I'm good at. And invest heavily in me and my, where I'm good at. So I, whatever it might be, if it's street preaching or teaching or whatever it is, let's invest in that. We put in a lot of money on that. And anything I'm not good at, which is singing, obviously, right? No, forget that. I just assume we take all the hymnals, pile them up, you know, douse them with kerosene, you know, burn them, and just get rid of that whole nonsense of singing. It's just craziness. I don't understand it. But obviously, I'm in the minority. Other people say, well, that's what I can do. And so we're trying to provide a place where anyone who's serious about ministry can not only have a room to do it in, but have a church that supports them in it, to the point of funding it as well as we can and trying to be balanced on that. So that's one thing we're doing. It's not just in music. It's in whatever it is. If a brother says, I want to do a youth ministry, then we're going to look to see how we can help fund that, promote that, support that, be a part of that. The elders take active participation in each of these ministries, not as leadership, not as to take over. Brother Mike comes over and we have our youth, they have their youth meetings, cooks the hamburgers for them, and then disappears. That's what we're talking about. So we're trying to do that so that everyone that's doing a ministry understands your ministry is valuable here. So that's one of the another thing we're doing. And that comes from an idea that we have, and we kind of encapsulate it in this saying that is, you get what you pay for. And I think that's basically true in church and in ministry. And you may object to the idea of tying money to it, but then if we're going to do that, then let's just get rid of all money. But no, we get what we pay for in church. So if we pay a lot for, if we put a lot of money into one ministry, we're going to get more success in it, generally speaking. And when we don't put any money, why is that? Well, one thing is because money helps. It's not everything. In fact, it's a very small part, but it does help. But the real reason is because your heart goes where your money goes. Or your money goes where your heart goes. It depends what side of the spiritual equation you are on, right? So if you're here and you're a spiritual person, then your money follows your heart. And where your heart is, that's where your efforts are, and that's where you're going to succeed, most likely. And if you're not on the spiritual equation, and you want to be, start putting your money in over there, and your heart will follow right along with it. So that's what we're doing. And the reason why we're doing this is because we see that the world is changing rapidly all around us. And a lot of what we're trying to do is we're trying to adjust to a very quickly changing world around us. This, I know we say that and they've been saying it forever, but the world has changed in the last, since 2001 in fundamental ways that are so dramatic that we, and I say we, this is, you know, people in high up in business, politics, cannot properly assess even at this moment. It's hard to calculate. We don't know where this is going yet. It's huge, the changes. Principally, the smartphone. Enormous transformation. If you don't have one, you know, then, or you're not really into it, you don't do much, you may not realize it, but it's amazing, incredible, this transformation. It's been said by others, and I think I agree with it as I think about it, that this revolution of what the smartphone has brought on is greater and will be seen as greater than the Gutenberg revolution when printing was invented. Now, if that's even close to being true, that's astounding. Because the Gutenberg revolution was astounding. I think that's actually probably accurate. I think this will turn out to be the most amazing, astounding development in history. So what does that mean for us? Us at Freeborn, you at Oak Knoll, each one of you, you missionaries, I think it actually means a lot, and I think we ought to think about that for a minute, what that could actually imply. That's what we're trying to think about. What that means in a word, or in a sentence, we could say, is that the spoken word now has greater reach than the written word. That's the first time in history that you could even come close to saying that. Because before you would speak, but then it's lost. So if you want to actually convey real information, if you want it to be lasting information, then you had to write it down. And if you wanted to process it, if you wanted it to mean anything to you, you had to be able to read it. So then you enter into literacy and languages and all kinds of different things like that. Well, now we're in a time where that isn't the case anymore. And that's interesting. That the spoken word can have greater reach than the written word. Look at a few numbers with me. 67% of the world has a mobile phone. 67% of the world's population has a mobile phone. 71% of Americans have a smartphone. These are huge numbers. This isn't like a phone, you know, I can make a call. I mean, the thing we do these days is call. Nothing is more irritating when I'm using my phone and somebody calls me. I look at it like, what's that? Do they not know what WhatsApp is? What's wrong with that person? They don't know how to send a text? What century are they from? That's so annoying. You're sitting there trying to use your phone and people are calling you. What are we using our phones for? We're using them for everything. Everything. And as it pertains to us, people are using them to get information. And they're consuming information at rates that is unparalleled in history. It's amazing. It started out with cat videos and stuff, and there's a lot of people still that still like those. Some of you are in here looking a little ashamed because you posted one just before you came to church. But increasingly, people are using these devices to get information, to find things, to find answers. And in the absence of any real competition, Google has become God in their lives. Google, where am I going when I die? Hey, Google. What happened to my child who got sick and died? Hey, Google, what's the meaning of life? And that's where they're getting their answers from. Did you realize as we compare the Gutenberg revolution to the digital revolution, the smartphone revolution, that 50% of adults in the USA today cannot read at the eighth grade level? 50%. That's why the spoken word is outpacing the written word. You can get a spoken message to that person they can understand. But if you send them that in a written form, it's likely that a large percentage of them will not be able to comprehend it. And that's just the USA. It's around the world. It irritates me that when I'm trying to find information, like for instance on how to fix an alternator, you know, or how to rewire a thermostat in a hotel room so you can get it down to 69 degrees. You know, you gotta look up these things. And you can do that. See me after church. It irritates me that when I look it up and say, hey, Google, how do I get the temperature down? I get stupid videos. I don't want a video. I just want a little page of text with about three steps that says do this, 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 and this. And I can read it, comprehend it, and do it. But you know why there's videos? Because most people, they're looking for that. It's interesting. And when they go to videos, they're going to YouTube. All right? 1.5 billion monthly active users on YouTube. 1.5 billion active every month watching these videos. Incredible. Incredible. Did you know that YouTube is the second largest search engine in the world? After Google, which owns YouTube? That's amazing. That's where people are going for answers. They're going there and they're searching for things. Sure, they're not all searching for what we're talking about, but when you have 1.5 billion people searching for something, surely there's a good portion of them, I would be happy with 1 million, that are looking for exactly the answer you have. Did you know that 2 to 1, at a factor of 2 to 1, millennials prefer YouTube over TV? They would rather watch YouTube. And that's really crazy, right? I bought this big TV finally after years. We bought one when we were in debt, which was real stupid, right? Then we kept it and just kept it as a symbol of our stupidity, right? So we could like drive the point home every day. Finally, we figured we had done our penance. And TVs got down to where I bought a 55-inch 4K high definition, ultra high definition for like $350. Ridiculous. It's almost a sin not to buy it. It's like I would be wasting money by passing that up. We put it up there. I go to all the work. I get the right signal so it's real clear. We sit down to watch it. And what do? We all pull out our phone. And we're looking at it through a little 6-inch screen or 5-inch screen. Watching videos. Terry's over there. I'm trying to listen to the damn local. She's watching some YouTube video. I'm like, what are you doing? You should have told me. We would have just mounted that on the wall. You say, yeah, but that's for young people. 55 plus. It's the largest growing demographic on YouTube today. 55-year-olds and older. The largest growing demographic. This is everybody. This is everybody. So there's this huge opportunity here. It's 1.5 billion people of all walks of life all around the world who are going there, and they're accessing it by typing in questions. That's the interface. You go in and it says search. And you type in what you're looking for. What would you do to find some street or plaza in the world where there was 1,000 people who went there every day and asked questions of whoever was walking by trying to find an answer to it. Do you think you might go there? You think you might engage with those people? It's not the only one. You got another interesting thing that's developed around the smartphone, and that's podcasting. Now, this is really interesting to me. So, 42 million Americans listen to podcasts weekly. 42 million. That's 15% of our population. Listen to a podcast weekly. I had never heard of these things. And I'm pretty technologically advanced. I'd never really considered them. I thought that's radio. No, that's not radio. It's different. And there's a lot of people engaged in it. Podcasts they like because they call it capturing lost time. So before, with the written word, you had to sit at home, get out your reading lamp, right? Set apart some time. Took a time to read a book. It was a hobby for some people. It was like something, it was a pastime, right? No, not this. They like podcasts because they're listening to them on the way to work. When they wouldn't be doing anything else, now they're educating themselves, entertaining themselves, whatever that might be. A lot of it is education. On the way home from work, whenever they have a moment, click it in. It remembers across devices. So you get home on my TV. I can turn it on my new TV. It's a smart TV. We don't even watch TV. We watch YouTube. And we watch, you know, stuff like that. You just go on and it's free and blink. It's like, what do you need cable for? It's right there. And they put it on and they listen to it. They listen to it all the times when they wouldn't be doing anything else. Or nothing else that they could do in that, right? So that's podcast. It's amazing. 42 million people are finding they have hours and hours of the day to get interested in something other than their job, than their family, the things that consume them on regular time where they're so busy. You say it's because we try to talk to them and they're working. We try to give them the gospel and they're just saturated. Their life is so full, but they have hours in the day. Imagine if you could ride with 1,000 people in a year. They say, I want you to ride with me to work and talk to me about anything you're interested in talking about. Ride with me to work and ride with me back and you can tell me anything you want to tell me. You'd think, wow, that's the greatest evangelistic opportunity ever. That's what they're doing. They're driving around, mowing the lawn, everything they do that they can't focus on a person or a book. They can listen to a podcast, and many, many people are doing that. Did you realize that only 3% of Americans go to the movies weekly? 15% listen to podcasts. Imagine if a theater came and said, we want you to make a movie and we're going to show it in our cinema. No matter how lousy it is, we'll show it. You make a movie and we'll put that up. We would be, if I told you that was actually right now, you would all be breaking your necks trying to get to the door to go do that. And that's only 3% of Americans go to the movies every week. 15% of Americans are listening to podcasts. 24% of Americans listen to it monthly. Let me put that in context to you. 21% of Americans are Catholic. You think we need to find people, you know, if we could reach all the Catholics, that demographic. Here's a demographic. It's actually greater than Catholicism. 24% of Americans listen monthly to podcasts. And just to view it how incredible this actually is, 85% of listeners listen to an entire episode. So this isn't like channel surfing. Like we could be on TV, we think, but people just run right through the channels. I mean, once the remote breaks, it's like, I'm not watching TV. I don't want to watch it. I want to see what I'm not watching. I want to keep track of everything I'm not seeing. Got to go around the dial. On podcasts, people are listening to all of them. 85% of them do. They're there to listen to it. They want to hear it. And 50% of the homes in the USA call themselves, in the census, consider themselves fans of podcasts. 50% say we are fans. We really like it. That's interesting. And we could go on. I could talk about apps and other things, and that's all. That, there's just so many things to say about it. I can't. But let me get to what I think is the point here. I think this is a natural medium for the gospel. It's about the spoken word. It's about preaching to people. However you want to define it, I'm not at all interested in getting into that argument. Call it whatever you want, whatever makes it work for you. This is about preaching to people. This is people searching for someone to preach to them. In numbers that are almost unfathomable.
Staggering.
Thank you. It just leaves you, it leaves me almost speechless that this is out there. Here's the deal about this. This is the democratization of information and the audience. You know what it costs to put up a podcast? The actual barrier of entry fee? Zero. There's no charge. I know you gotta have something to record on, and you can do that on your phone that, you know, apparently you know everyone has already. What's the cost to put up a YouTube video? Nothing. Nothing. There's no charge. Just upload it. You don't register, you can put, I think, a 3-minute video up. If you register and you give them your email address and Google verifies that that's really you, you can put up as long as you want, up to like, I forget what it is, like 128 gig or something. Hours and hours and hours. You put a whole sermon, just pop it up there. They'll host it for you. They handle all the traffic. There's no website fees, nothing. And where does those go? They go all over the world. 90% of internet users are YouTube viewers. You reach everybody. And you say, well, there are some people who don't have smartphones. I agree. And so we're going to send you to go talk, to preach to them. But you know that, like, Facebook is developing these solar-powered planes that can fly for like a month or more. And the reason they're doing that is to beam the internet down to those people. It's true. Because a company requires growth. It's not about how big it is. It's about how it grows. Excuse me. Facebook, Google, these companies, Apple, they're at a level in which growth is no longer really possible in many places. They're saturated. And so they're just looking for markets. And they're opening up markets all over the place. I forget the number right now. I didn't write it down, but it's staggering how many people are being connected to the internet on a weekly basis. It's amazing. Now, I want to be clear on one thing. I'm not trying to replace traditional methods. You say, well, I really like street preaching. I do too. I really like door knocking. Well, me not so much. But I understand. I really like this method. I like these traditional orthodox methods. And I think you're trying to, you know, shove those old fogies out the door. No, I'm not. In fact, quite the opposite. I think that our traditional methods that we have honed over a very long time, and collectively as a church over hundreds of years, might be our competitive advantage in this. Because here's the problem with YouTube, podcasts, and apps, and all of these. There's a lot of people doing this. There are hundreds, thousands of hours being uploaded constantly. Podcasts everywhere. And so you say, well, how can I get someone to hear me? And that is a hard question, but there's even a more difficult question than that. That's actually the easy question. The hard question is, how can I get somebody who lives in this city to hear me? Because you could have an audience of 1 million people, and not one of them live in San Antonio. And if you're trying to do a work in San Antonio, or in Gdansk, or in Torun, and you have all these people on the podcast, but you're trying to start a church, you're not, you know, at least that's me. I'm not trying to be, you know, the podcast pastor. Although it does have a nice ring to it. I might just put that on my business card. No, I'm trying to reach people here. How do I get people here to go and listen to it? Well, that's hard. And that's the conundrum that every business deals with. It's called customer acquisition cost. It's hard. And it's expensive. But we have this whole network. And this whole, we're already well polished on how to do this. Get information to people personally. So what if, one option is, what if we give that information on the information we're already giving them? We have a YouTube channel, we put it on the tracks. We have a podcast, we put it on the tracks. We have a website, we put it on the tracks. Now websites, that to me is like the bottom tier now, we really need to move up, but let's say that too. We get it on there. What if our tracks become that? What if, instead of passing out a track that, in my experience, most people do not read anymore? Especially if we're wording them in 8th grade reading level. 50% of them aren't reading that. What if our track is an invitation or a QR code to snap a picture, right? And it takes you to an interactive track on their phone that they can scroll through, zoom in, and interact with, and a little thing that says, do you have questions? Would you like someone to visit you? Are you interested in the gospel? And queries them. And it's interactive. What would that look like? And we use our traditional methods to get that out. Pass those out house to house. When we're out in the street, give them to people at the bus stop. Say, hey, look, you can get more information here. I know you're in a hurry, and that's fine, but look, right here, ton of information, videos. Look, there's videos for kids, there's videos for adults, there's all kinds of stuff. You could go there, and maybe you'd be interested, and there's a place there you can contact us if you want to know more. We'd love to reach out to you again and do a traditional visit and talk to them in their home. That's the goal. I'm not trying to say let's do away with churches, and I'm saying no. Let's not be like the Christians of the 16th century that after the printing press was invented, right, and became widespread, they kept making handwritten manuscripts of the Bible. And we actually have, in the corpus of the New Testament manuscript evidence, we have manuscripts, and this is what all the critical text people like to scoff at. We have manuscripts that are newer than printed Bibles. Because Christians are like, no, I am not gonna use an iPad. Now look, I understand, but you gotta realize too. You know, it's not like this is new. Moses took his tablet up and downloaded from the cloud. I'm glad that worked. We actually have some of our churches in Mexico whose official position is it is sin to read the Bible on an iPad in church. Yeah. Yeah, that's, yeah, anyway. No, I understand. We're like, no. And look, I'm not talking about personal preference. You say, well, you don't like paper Bibles. I probably have more paper Bibles than pretty much anybody in this building, I would think. I'd be willing to compete anyway. I have a lot of them. Believe me, it's been a sore spot in our marriage. So Christians are kind of reluctant to embrace new technology. Christians seem to be reluctant sometimes to see, to even open their eyes and see where the world is going. You say, I'll never use that to read out of. You know, that's what they said with the scrolls when the books came out. To me, it's amazing. I'm not trying to tell you you're wrong to have a paper Bible. That's wonderful. You keep that. When the lights go out, I'll still be able to read mine. No, but in seriousness, what I'm trying to tell you is that In many ways, this revolution completely solved many of our problems. It really did. We had a problem in Mexico. What are we going to do if they quit printing the Spanish Bible? What are we going to do? That's a non-issue. Everybody that I talk to is reading it on their phone. They can download it anytime they want. And when they talk to somebody, they say, I don't have a Bible. Here, download it. Boom. Now they have it on their phone. Yeah. That easy. Yeah. With the near field technology is going to happen, you just touch your phone to their back and you give them a Bible. Boom. Bam. You know, you think, well, you're just an anti-Luddite or whatever. I made a paper, exhaustive, Strong's type concordance. Actually made it manually. Yep. Took me 6 years. What a waste of time! Who wants to look up something there? Jesus. Lord, oh, that's worse. There's too many. You go on Blue Letter Bible, which I love. You go on there, type in anything. Pops up an answer. Boom, there it is. One verse, got it. The world is changing. Yes, it is. It really is. And I'm not trying to get you to change. I'm trying to say that as a church, we need to recognize the changes that are happening around us. And we need to figure out how we fit into this, because the world is going there. And I don't want to be the Amish. Sitting over there with my big belt buckles on my shoes. I don't know why they put their belt buckles there. So there are tremendous advantages to this digital thing. Sure, are there dangers? Absolutely. Can it be abused in horrible ways? Absolutely. But it's not going away. And if you think, you know, if I just close my eyes, I'll wake up one day and we'll be back in 1980. No, it's not going away. I think we better figure out if this is something that could work for the gospel. Because if the numbers we're talking about, even in small percentages, it's incredible. Amen. I think that this offers a wide range of opportunity for diverse gifts. Those of us that are street preachers are resistant to anything that would take away from that. But not everybody's a street preacher. And that's okay. Now, I'm not going to tell you that all the gifts are equal, because that's stupid. But we don't all have the same gifts. And you don't need to worry about whether your gift is unequal. You just need to worry about doing your gift. And our traditional methods really only really worked well for certain kinds of gifts. And people that didn't have those, or didn't have the confidence in those, or whatever the case may be, were largely left out in very supporting roles. And they did that job admirably. And this church has done that. Many people in this church have done that for years admirably. I'm not trying to diminish that. But what if I could tell you that there is a chance, a possibility, that there is a ministry out there that is a prime location ministry that you could do. You don't have to just do supporting roles. There's actually something your gifts might make you better at than the street preachers could be at. Right. And that's what I found. So we tried to make some videos, and we're trying to do that. And so the first, you know, natural for me is I'll be on camera. Well, that didn't work out too well. I don't know what happens when the camera turns on. It's stiff. Steven's over there laughing. Oh, it's ugly. You know, I used to make fun of the actors, and they're like, well, now, what is my character thinking? After a day of trying to film, I'm telling Steven, what is my character thinking? Give me something. I gotta get into this character. It's really hard. Yes, it is. I try to do podcasts. Bought all the stuff. Some of you saw I got the mixer, got the microphone. Sit down. I'm good at talking. I can talk for a long time. All right. Here we go. Okay. Oh, that's hard. It's hard. I bring in other people and they're like, oh, podcast. Oh, let me, blah, blah, blah. They just, everybody has different abilities. And this field is opening up. This is not to say let's do away with others. But this is opening up on a tremendous thing. The business world is being rocked to its core by this transformation. The youngest self-made woman billionaire, right, largely got there because she was a makeup artist and she went on YouTube and did make videos for free on how to apply her makeup. Until she, in 3 years, built up her makeup line, sold it for $900 million. You think, well, that's the thing. This is how it's changed. Not only do the publishers not control what Bibles can be printed anymore, the television channel can't control what you can watch anymore. And the government can't really control what you can publish anymore. It's like incredible. It's free speech mania. You're looking for a place where you could just preach whatever and anyone, millions and billions, would be accessible to listen to it? That's there. Yes, right. Now, that's not to say that just anybody who puts up a podcast will be successful. It's hard. And most of them aren't successful. And it's going to take some talent. So this isn't something we can just, you know, do on our time off. I'm not talking about, hey, when you got a little bit of time, you know, look into the phone and say something. They got an app for that. It's called Facebook. And Twitter. Right? Just say whatever comes off the top of your head. And that's fine too. Look, there's a ministry over there, possibly. But that's not what I want to talk about. This is a tremendous opportunity for some people. It may not be for you, and that's okay. There's other opportunities and there's tons of things to do. Well, it's not that we're lacking opportunities in place, right? I'm just talking to those of you that are saying, I've been looking for something I can do that would fit my abilities, my gifts. What could I do for the gospel that isn't just sending money? That's fine. That's great. But could you do more? Some of you could. And there is a tremendous opportunity out here beckoning for some talented people that are willing to put in a lot of effort and build a ministry over there. I would ask you, if God is calling you, get it, calling you. Some people, you just got to really put it on the nose for them. Is God calling you? You hearing all this and you're thinking, wow, I think I could do that. I can't street preach and I can't preach in the meeting. I'm not going to be a pastor. And, you know, what part can I have in the church? I could do that. Yep. I'm interested in that. Well, then I'm talking to you right now. I'm talking to you right now. How can you help? How can you be a part of this? Well, first off, it takes money. And it does. If you're going to do it right, it takes money. Now, it doesn't take money like it used to. Like a television studio is outrageous, the amount of money that takes. This is nothing. You can fund it yourself. You and a few friends could fund it. A podcast, that's not hard. You need a decent microphone. You probably need some type of a mixer with a compressor on it. And you need a recorder. And what I bought, you know, you're looking at what? Maybe $100, $300, $600 maybe to go get really nice stuff, $600. And that'll last you for as long as you want to make a podcast. I mean, that's not bad. That's less than the plane ticket to Poland. Right? And if you speak Polish, you could actually preach to Poles. If you speak Spanish, you could actually have a Spanish ministry going into Mexico, into Spain, Colombia, Guatemala, Honduras. I'm not saying we shouldn't go to Mexico. I believe there is a need for a corporal presence. We need a church, and it has to be a real church, not a virtual church. I believe that. But not everyone's called to start a church. Not everyone is able to. But maybe you could do this. So it takes some finances. So you might want to try it as a part-time ministry, right? You work a full-time job here. But you really focus in on this. You start doing a podcast. You start doing some YouTube videos. I would recommend maybe start with one of those. And look, you think, well, I got to have all this camera. Actually, no. Steven Soderbergh, well, many of you know him. He's a very acclaimed movie director. He said that from now on, he's filming all his films on iPhones. I don't know why. That's what he said. But that's interesting. So it doesn't take a whole lot. You know what it takes? You know what the difference is between a good video and a bad video, between a good podcast and a bad podcast? Gift. That's the difference. Some people have a spark, have a creative spark, and they do it and it works. And that's what we're going to have to try to find, someone that can do that. Some people that have that. And that's going to take some time. And you might be that person, but you might not be them right now. It may take you a while to get there. But if you're really interested and you're really focused, and you try hard at it, you might find out you can be that person. And how many people do you have to reach to make it worthwhile? You know, if I could reach 10,000 people on a podcast weekly that would listen to 80% of my sermon every week, I think I could be pretty happy with that. Yeah. I would definitely call myself a podcast pastor. I could see that happening, definitely. Leave you losers behind. Go to my flock. And 10,000 people on a podcast really is not that much. I mean, that really is, you know, that's small potatoes. This is about reaching people where they're at. I've heard a lot of things people saying, I've heard it mentioned many times. They say, people aren't interested anymore. We preach and they're not interested. They're interested in all kinds of things. What are you talking about? Okay, so we had it easy for a long time, especially in Mexico. You go down there, you know what we found out is interesting? We found out something. We went to Mexico, we found out people aren't interested in the gospel. In the traditional gospel, John 3:16, God loves you. Right? They're not interested. All right, so they're not interested. Just keep preaching it, maybe someday they'll be touched. No, let's give a different message. What's the difference between Catholic and Christian? All of a sudden, interest everywhere. People that weren't interested are interested. You say they're not interested now. They're not interested in anti-religion because the world is increasingly non-religious. It's not interesting to them. Why don't we find out what they are and reach them where they're at? You know what's interesting about podcasts? People are listening to long format discussion. My wife is the one who got me in on all this stuff. She's maniac on this. Loves this stuff. You know what she listens to? You'd think, you know, like makeup and stuff, but that's natural. All natural. No. She listens to psychology summits. All kinds of stuff on the epistemology and this and that, and you're like, what? And she's all like, oh yeah, this is great. And then she wants, you know, go and practice, of course. Like, you know, lay on the couch. Well, I said, all right. That's fine, I'll do that. But then I'm buying a box of scalpels and I'm going to practice. Because I think I'm a neurosurgeon. No, they're looking for long format discussion. They're looking for information. They're wanting to educate themselves. They're figuring out you can get a college education for free on your way to work.
That's right.
And they are not picky about the information. They just want it to be interesting and compelling. Maybe if we, in our street preaching, could figure out what they're interested in and reach them there, we'd be more compelling. One last thing. I think some of you should consider this as a full-time ministry. Because if you're going to do it right, it is full-time. This is hard work. We thought, yeah, we'll make some videos. That would be easy. Oh, that's not easy. That's hard. Hours of editing and adjusting the sound and, oh, the shot came out wrong and, you know, we get it just right and grandma walks in, slams the door and, ah. No, it's rough. Podcasts, that's tough work. That's hard. Coming up with something to say for an hour and, you know, keep the conversation going. Look, it makes you look at the news and all that much better. I used to criticize them. I'm like, no, they're doing good work. That's a good job right there. That's hard work. No, it takes a long time. This might be a full-time ministry for some people where you just, now how could this be financially viable as a full-time ministry? Because you have to consider that. Because if you're working, it's not full-time, and that's fine. But I actually think there's room here for a full-time ministry. And then there's a couple ways which it could be done. One is a church could support it as an evangelism effort. And I don't see how it's any less viable than any other form of evangelism. I think it should be judged and valued on its success. And if you got somebody that can do a podcast and they're getting a million listens a year, I think that's certainly worth supporting. My goodness, that's incredible. So, you know, that's one way. Another way is you open up, you do it personally, like outside the church, pretty much. You open up a Patreon account, and you accept donations. Now, I think that's perfectly possible and legitimate. I don't think I would say, hey, donate to me, but this is what's interesting about this. There's a person that Terry watches, and she watches him on YouTube and follows his podcast, and he never says anything. He gives everything away. He's a psychology professor, and he gives everything away. It's all free. But he has a Patreon account, and he gets $65,000 a month coming into that. And he never talks about it. He never advertises it. He's not asking for money. He's been doing this for years, and people just kept saying, hey, we want to support this. We like what you're doing. We want to support it. And they start sending that in. I think you'll find Christians that say, hey, here's somebody who's doing what we thought we should be done. They're doing it well. Let's support that ministry. So there's a couple ways, and there may be many others. I don't know. I'm just saying, and I'm not trying to push anyone in any direction. I'm saying we should really think about this for a while. We should really consider it. The Bible says that God gave the word, and great were the company that published it. Amen. I don't want to get hung up on one method. Amen. And I don't want to put my head in the sand and think that orthodoxy is anti-technology. I want to look around and find where the opportunities for the gospel are. And I want Christ to be glorified in every medium. Amen. Everyone. Amen. Thank you for your time and for your support and your interest in what we're doing.
Stand and turn to number 16. All right.